Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 91. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And this is Melissa.
Yay, we all made it here in spite of fun, icy weather.
In spite of black ice.
Not as bad today as it was last night. Yeah, last night it sucked.
Yeah, did you hear about the 60-car pileup?
Yeah.
Isn't that insane? 60 cars. It's like Cannibal Run over here.
Yeah, it's just great or something. I don't know. This week we're actually going to finish another director series,
yes.
Dang it, finally.
Yay.
Pat, finishing up David Fincher with Panic Room, going to be a good time. But first, before we can get to all that, what did we watch this week? Melissa, why don't you go first? You got a pretty long list there, so we'll let you finish it up. Go for it.
All right.
Hang on.
Am I good?
Oh. Scooch that a little closer. And okay. Now we're good. Yes.
Thanks. Sorry.
Hey, no problem.
I watched The Fountain, which definitely has to be one of my favorite movies.
Cool.
I can completely understand why people don't appreciate that because it's just very artistic and...
It's abstract.
I guess it could be an acquired taste, but I love it. Oh my God. I could watch it every week, but then I'd have to have like a bowl of ice cream and cry for like an hour. So, and then I watched Vanilla Sky for the first time. Ethan. I'm just waiting for you. But I actually had no idea what it was about. I mean, everyone is always like, oh my God, so messed up at the end, or there's this huge twist. And I just thought that so much of it was totally captivating, and the certain sequences with Penelope Cruz and Tom Cruise, like they're just, their love story was so, I just totally
bad.
Bought it. No, I thought it was wonderful.
There's Ethan.
And like I said earlier, I don't think I can ever look at Cameron Diaz the same again. Crazy psycho who messed everything up. But overall, I really enjoyed that. So, sorry, Ethan, to disappoint.
We have half and half.
Yeah.
Half the crew likes it, half the crew, not so much.
Yes.
Whatever.
but didn't you like Tom Cruise in this film?
Yeah, very much. I thought he actually was really good and didn't suck and wasn't all pretentious about himself, so.
yeah, well, he's like, I'll just throw this out really quick. I've always found it interesting because he knows that he's a guy who's always been said that he's just too pretty. He's not that good an actor. He's just really handsome. So he's kind of playing, he's kind of playing off of that. He's playing an overprivileged jackass who's a millionaire in this movie. The only thing about him that everybody loves, the fact that he's good looking, is taken away from him, and he has to deal with that. I thought that was really interesting.
The whole mask thing, because they used it so much after a while, was really kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And the whole relationship between Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Counselor, I thought that was so interesting. And the juxtaposition between the fact that Kurt Russell doesn't know what's going on and he's telling the story and it's not all linear was just the way it was told and delivered was what made it so interesting and compelling.
Yeah. Isn't that an awesome opening scene, too, with the empty Times Square? I love that scene.
Mm-hmm. I did, too. Yeah.
Yay, Vanilla Sky.
I unfortunately watched Observe and Report.
Yay!
Now, there's a movie Ethan could get behind.
I just think Seth Rogen needs to go away.
Well, you're supposed to hate him in the movie, though. He's an unlikable person.
Well, yeah, but I think that... I mean, I can't believe that this movie actually made its money back. I think it cost like $18 million to make, and it made $24 million back. So it's like, damn it. It makes me so angry, because it's like, why are people going to see this kind of thing? And
it's a great movie, that's why.
Maybe if you're under some form of intoxication. I don't know. I didn't think...
I thought it worked as a comedic version of Taxi Driver.
I didn't like it either, Melissa.
I'm not going there. No. I just did not.
I'm going to have to go... I keep avoiding it.
I just don't think date rape is funny. I don't think beating people up for laughs is funny.
It's not supposed to be funny, though.
Well, then why was it a comedy? The tone was comedic?
I don't think it's even...
It's not a thriller.
I think it's as much of a comedy as The King of Comedy is a comedy, to be honest. The Scorsese movie?
Don't go there.
Wow. Go on the Scorsese route. I can't do that. I think Travis Bickle is a much more interesting character than the Seth Rogen character.
Or Rupert Pupkin.
Yeah, Rupert. Or Rupert Pupkin. Yeah.
not gonna lie, the sequence where him and the two Asian twin guys and his whole entourage are going down the escalator and it's real slow, that was definitely pretty funny.
Yeah, I think I laughed at that and some scenes with Ray Liotta. But yeah, I thought it was just too nasty and mean-spirited to be good. I didn't like it either. Rubbed me the wrong way.
Okay, what else did you see?
I saw Sex Drive.
No, I haven't seen that. That's the one with James Franco, right? With the big donut and...
No. James Marsden.
Yeah, James Franco.
Oh, James Marsden.
There is a big Mexican donut, yes.
Wait, do you remember how the entire marketing for that movie was like, the quote they used in the courses was, "You'll never look at a donut the same way again." That's what's supposed to make me want to see this movie?
They put a black dildo on the front of the donut. So, oops, there goes our explicit rating. But anyways, it's a lot like the plot is kind of like Eurotrip, and I think that's what it was trying to be like, but it didn't even come close. Because it's like two kids, one of them's been talking to some girl on the internet, and they go on a road trip to go meet her. But, of course, along the way, you know, everything gets messed up or whatever, and there's actually this sequence where...
Hilarity ensues.
Yeah, where they run into this group of Amish people partying because apparently in Amish culture there's a point where you get to a certain age and you get a chance to go drink and do all these horrible things and decide if you would rather be Amish or rather go in the normal world, and so that's what this was. And they hook up with some Amish girl and it was really funny, but I watched the unrated version, and so there's random porn stars just walking through shots that you know weren't originally there, and you can tell they were just kind of spliced in. And then you're kind of like, wait, oh, there's naked girls. Like, it was really weird. I understand it wasn't really for my audience. It was for male audiences, but I don't know. That was weird. Was
James Marsden funny, at least?
Yeah, all the main characters were funny, and I don't know. There was this one brother character who they played off. He was always talking about how his brother was gay, but then he really ended up being gay.
That's the guy.
Yeah, and I don't know. He got old after a while.
All I know about is that Clark Duke gets pooped on in it, so.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That tells you all you need to know.
So I would say you're not missing much.
But better than Observe and Report?
Yes.
Okay.
By far. Okay. I also saw Adventureland. Have you guys seen that?
I have seen it.
Yeah. I've seen it, yeah.
I really disliked this.
Really?
I felt like Jesse Eisenberg is like a Michael Cera wannabe.
He's the poor man's Michael Cera. There's no way around that.
Jesse Eisenberg's been around longer than Michael Cera.
He has. It's true. He has.
But I feel like I went into this thinking Michael Cera was actually in it. Mm. And then I was like, oh, no, that guy just looks kind of like him. And he kind of acts like him. And so I'm sorry, but I don't know. He was weird. He was okay. He was a good actor. But Kristen Stewart just ruins everything. Like... Her new role is just to be like a grungy, whiny, like misunderstood teenager that has like bad hair that she constantly has to move out of her face. That's her role in everything she does now.
Wow. She is so hot.
She's so trashy and gross, and the whole Ryan Reynolds her thing was creepy. And
didn't you think he was good though?
Yeah,
I thought he did a really good job.
I did. I thought that was interesting that he would do a role like that, and it wasn't all like, "Oh, I'm this hot guy." And
yeah.
Even though he kind of was, but it was only to like teenage
just
girls.
A scuzzy hot guy.
Yeah.
So the casting ruined that movie for you then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just sequences that I think were supposed to have more meaning just ended up being awkward.
Hmm.
I just once it was over, the only way I could describe it was that was really awkward.
Hmm.
Instead of, oh, that was funny, or I didn't really get much out of it. So.
Okay.
And then now I have to talk about Dead Girl.
You can end on an up note, though.
Last night, I was just sitting there flipping through Netflix, you know, watch it now, on-demand stuff, whatever you call it. And I don't know, I'd seen it before, like previews of it or heard of it, and was like, oh, why not? Read the little... you know, one or two sentence tagline for it, and was like, oh, sure, I have to find out what this is about. Just, unless you want to see, like, the most disturbing thing ever, I would just not watch this.
No, okay, it's not cool disturbing, though.
No, not cool disturbing at all. Like, I'd rather watch all Saws, like, back-to-back than watch this again. Like, it wasn't really horror-based, it wasn't jumpy, it wasn't scary, it was just a messed-up idea.
Mm.
And So the basic plot is that there's these two kids, Ricky and JT, and they end up skipping school, and they go get drunk, and they end up in a mental institution that's been abandoned for years. And they find, of course, they find a door at the end of this hallway and have to break it open. And they find some girl in the basement who's covered in plastic wrap or like a plastic bag of some sort. And they don't know if she's alive, and so they kind of poke her, and then the bag kind of goes up and down to show that she's actually breathing. They're like, holy crap, oh, she's still alive. And what was so weird about the whole sequence of them finding the girl was, if I, being a human being, found someone wrapped in a plastic bag, naked, almost dead, I would say, oh my gosh, are you okay? And never did that come to any of the characters' minds. They just wanted to poke her and prod her and take the bag off her and stuff. It wasn't, I mean, like, if you found someone like that, wouldn't you be a little intrigued to say, hi, sweetie, are you okay? Like, I'm going to make sure you're all right. I mean, I don't know why
there's a certain South. Mm-hmm. There's a certain South Park episode I kind of want to bring up, but I'll just leave it alone.
Well, are the boys, is it established that they're normal before they find the dead girl, or?
Are they normal?
Yeah, are they, messed up weird to begin with, or?
Yeah, there was no allusion to that they had any issues, but JT definitely does, and he ends up having basically...
Justin Timberlake?
No, I wish. No, that's just his character's name.
Too bad.
And he basically ends up having a relationship with this dead girl throughout the movie, which is weird because the dead girl has the ability to infect or kill or whatever anyone who she wants, yet she ends up with this JT guy the whole time, and she is tied to this bed, and yeah, they end up having sex with her, and then Ricky, his friend, highly disagrees with this and is trying to stop it, and in the process of it, people get killed and everyone gets upset about it, and just it was weird, but I actually liked the direction of it, and
the aesthetic was good.
Yeah, it really was, but I mean, all the characters were pretty lacking, and there was actually no explanation to anything, really. There wasn't a lot of exposition that just laid it out for you. And so you kind of had to figure it out. I mean, it wasn't that hard to figure out, but it was awful. And, yeah.
There's a movie like this that came out in the 80s called The River's Edge with Keanu Reeves and Crispin Glover, where it's a group of teens. They find a dead girl, and they don't do anything about it. And they blame it on the local pervert played by Dennis Hopper. Very disturbing movie, but definitely doesn't go as far as Dead Girl does.
Well, then they kind of allude to something similar in Fido. We talked about this before the show.
Yeah.
But it was alluded to and not in such graphic and disturbing, just gross detail.
Cheerful movie about flesh eating.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really show anything, but I remember there is this one scene where there's this really scary dog that they run into a few times in this a mental institution, and JT is wanting to go get with the dead girl again, and they never even give her a name, which I thought was kind of weird. They just keep calling her dead girl, but then this dog comes up and is growling at him, and this is the part of the movie that really explains that JT and the dead girl actually kind of have some kind of weird relationship, because she kind of looks at him and is like, okay, whatever, and she kills the dog, and throughout this whole sequence there's happy piano music playing, and it was just kind of really? And if the music hadn't been there, it kind of would have been scary, but it was supposed to be it was you were supposed to like it or something. It's very hard to explain.
Creepy. I
didn't like it. So okay. Don't watch that.
Do you want to end on the up note?
Of
what you saw Friday night.
Yes. Do we want to talk about that now?
If you want to, yeah, by all means. Yes. Ethan, you're getting a copy this week. I can say that publicly. So, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, Ink was... I really had no preconceived notions about this. No one had told me anything about it, and anything they had told me was extremely vague. Because Julia, I asked her, so I was like, what is this even about? Before you guys got there, and she's like, well, it's really hard to explain. And I mean, obviously after seeing it, I can understand that, but it just totally captivated by it. I can't believe what they did with the budget they had, and the just, they were so creative with it. And yeah, even on the way home, Spencer and I were talking about, you know, Spider-Man 3 can have $100 million to make a movie.
$200 million.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever.
Was that like closer to 300?
That's what I heard
probably,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. All the Spider-Mans, you know, it's like they use so much visual effects and they're so dependent on having money to make everything seem real, but it's really all fake. Mm-hmm. But everything in this movie was so real because they had to come up with creative ways to make everything. So it's like, it just, it worked so well. And I mean, a lot of independent films can be really bad,
yeah,
and not work at all. And I mean, even going into this, you know, Spencer had no idea what it was, and you know, just heard independent film, and he's like, wow, this is like just exceeded my expectations way beyond what I ever could have expected this to be. And just, I was totally moved by it. Just, oh my gosh. I mean, seriously, could be like one of my favorite movies now. So.
Awesome. Oh, knocking stuff over. Yeah, and so should we mention the budget now that we can officially?
Yes, we can. Yeah, let's talk about it.
Barry did we hosted the Q&A for the screening.
Yay.
And it was at UCCS, sponsored by the UCCS Film Club, University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, I guess I should say.
Thank you, Dave, for plugging my university. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but I got to videotape the Q&A. And it's been revealed that for all of you who have seen Ink, they made it for $250,000. Which is it's amazing.
If they had thrown out $1 million, it would have been like, okay, I understand that, but $250,000? That's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So was it better for you the second time you saw it, Barry?
What I told you, and honestly how I feel about it, like the first time I saw it, it was kind of an experience, and I kind of looked at it through my snobby movie critic glasses. The second time, I just enjoyed it. It's like I'm watching the fight scene, like, cool, stuff is going to break and then get fixed again. It's so cool. Like the whole time, it was just, it moved so quickly for me the second time. In fact, I'm like, man, I hate that scene is over. I just want to watch it again. It's like, it's one of those few films where even though you love the flow of the story and everything, there's certain scenes that are so good. They're like little movies unto themselves.
I totally agree with that because I feel like the first scene, the opening scene of the movie, if you just showed someone that, it was just kind of inclusive in itself. I mean, obviously it has a lot to do with the rest of the movie, but it was just so beautiful all by itself. And another thing I really noticed that I liked was that the beginning and the end both ended with the guy and his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like the parallels between everything in the movie was just so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Indeed.
So the best action scenes of the year. Yeah. So cool. So cool.
I'm looking forward to see if Ethan drinks the Kool-Aid as well. I'm hoping so. Mm. I'm hoping so.
And Ethan, seriously, if you don't drink the Kool-Aid, that's okay. Well, because I didn't tell you this, Dave, and we'll discuss this afterwards, but I did meet somebody there who wasn't crazy about the film.
Okay.
They said they thought tonally it was all over the place. That was his big complaint. We could discuss that later. But yeah, I thought it was interesting.
Okay. Yep. And during the movie, I actually skipped out and we went and grabbed coffee. But they were saying, you know, hey, as long as it draws a reaction, they don't care.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And if you want to see Ink, I can't reveal the date yet, otherwise I'll get in trouble. Mm-hmm. But put it in your Netflix queue. You can add it now, and it will be in Blockbusters probably within the next month at the most.
That's
all
great.
I can say. All right. Ethan, why don't you go next, sir?
Well, I watched 26 movies this week.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. I only watched 9. First, I watched the original Cat People.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Barry, I remember reading that article I dug up about you, how you've shown that movie a lot in your class.
Yeah, to my film class. Yeah.
Doesn't usually get a very good response.
No, never.
Are they more like, less people, more cat?
Yeah, they're bored by it. They think it's silly. Yeah.
I like it.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I thought it was a really just interesting sexual subtext thingy. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's important to show that. It's very much a movie about how people were afraid of sex at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt the amount of people and cat was balanced.
Yeah. Wasn't that swimming pool scene really cool?
It was, yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you liked it.
Yeah. Next, I finally saw the remake of The Hills Have Eyes.
Hmm.
The first one?
Yeah, not the number two. I'd sworn off it for a while because I really hated the original, and I wasn't a big fan of Alexandre, what's his last Aja? Name again?
Yeah, I think it is. Is it an Aja?
Yeah, Alexandra Abba's last movie, our first movie, Dancing Queen. No, High Tension?
High Tension, you're right, yep.
Okay, Alexandra Abba's High Tension. The Swedish guy, yeah. But I actually, I didn't mind it. I actually, in fact, I thought it was very well done, and I think the first thing that really made it work for me was I thought it was very well cast, like, Ted Levin, that dude is awesome. It's amazing watching him in Silence of the Lambs, and now watching him now, when he's always, like, playing these very kind of butch roles and stuff, yeah. And, Pyro from the X-Men was good, and Kathleen Turner, and, who else was in it?
Kathleen Turner's in it?
No, I'm just making jokes about names.
Ha ha.
Okay. And the mutants in it, they were good. They gave good performances.
So what did you really think of it?
I just thought it was very well done, and I think it's been like a week since I've watched it, so that's why I'm really stalling right now.
But you think it's better than the original, though?
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, we can move past that awkward conversation. I scratched Dog Day Afternoon off my list of shame.
Cool. What'd you think?
Which is a movie I can honestly say nothing negative about. I think it's perfect in every way.
Yeah.
It's the best performance I've ever seen Al Pacino give.
Yeah.
And it's just expertly directed by Sidney Lumet. And it must have been, I assume... I think it was 1975, and that year had, like, the best picture lineup ever, because you had that, Cuckoo's Nest, Jaws, Barry Lyndon in Nashville.
Yep.
I probably would have voted for DDA if I was a voter, but I guess I assume at the time the whole gay thing must have turned off a lot of people.
Yeah, very controversial. And even now, if they had done the film, you get the sense they probably would have toned it down. There's something about the 70s that, you know, about having that taboo material in there. But yeah, wasn't John Cazale terrific too in that?
Yeah, he's like Fredo. He's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
His haircut was really good too.
Okay.
I saw David Cronenberg's Dead Ringers.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
And there's just some imagery that you will only see in a David Cronenberg movie.
Yeah, thank God.
But the best part of the movie, though, it was set in Toronto, and all the Canada references. Like, there's a part where one of the twins, it's shown that he's kind of gone into despair, and he's, like, sunk into the deep side, and he's, like, eating all this fast food. And you see a cup from Harvey's, which is a Canadian fast food chain. I'm like, yes.
Any poutine?
Unfortunately, no. But they did call soda pop, so that made me happy.
Isn't Jeremy Irons just amazing in that film?
He is. He's awesome. Both of them. They're both amazing. I didn't really like the woman in it. I don't know. I didn't really like her performance for some reason. But he was awesome in it. He. I know this is a very cliche thing to say about any kind of dual role movie, but he always made it very clear who was who.
Yeah, and that's even, not easy to do.
Yeah, even in very subtle ways.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw David Lean's Brief Encounter.
Oh, great film.
That's a good movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it was a very good movie. At the time, it must have been kind of radical, too, wasn't it? Because it was it's very much from the woman's perspective.
Yes. And, yeah, about temptation and infidelity. Yeah, that was taboo stuff when it came out.
Yeah, having a pretty risque week here. I watched Trick or Treat.
So what did you think?
Oh, yeah, I want to see that.
It was all right.
It's not the best movie ever, but it deserved a theatrical release, I think.
I can kind of see why I got dumped.
Really? What do you think? How come?
I thought it was fun, but I think more from reasons not really responsible for the movie, but I can kind of see it being hard to market. It's nothing really that special. Like, I mean, it's better than probably, I don't know, like Whiteout or something, but it's just really nothing worth writing home about. Though we'll say it has one of, I think, maybe the best line in any movie this year, which is Charlie Brown is an asshole. But
you didn't like the part when the kids went down to to the crash site?
Yeah, that was all right. Actually, Dylan Baker, he did kind of reprise his role from Happiness. His son's name in this was even Billy. I'm like, whoa.
That's creepy.
Yeah, and though there's one scene I thought was kind of weird. Dave, you'd agree with this. It's kind of like, the movie's a bit of a throwback to like 80s Spielberg, wouldn't you say?
You can definitely see it. You'd almost like put like in the same world as like Parents or something like that. There's just like some very macabre, dark humor in it. Like with the son and what they did with the kid who ate too much candy.
Yeah, but there's a scene involving Anna Paquin's character where they play this like Marilyn Manson song. And I thought it was like such a weird choice for what's supposed to be like this throwback movie that it kind of, it was like, did the studio have something to do with this movie? I kind of wanted, because it was really short too, didn't you find?
They definitely hacked it up. I guess the original cut of the movie was all four stories by themselves as opposed to going the Pulp Fiction route.
Yeah.
Which I think it probably would have helped it to do that route.
Yeah. And I found, you know, there was that reoccurring guy throughout the movie.
Sam, so, yes.
Yeah, and I felt the way that the final showdown with him and Brian Cox just did, like, nothing for me and kind of took the movie down for me. It was just kind of really...
The only good resolution with Brian Cox is what happened after Sam left.
Yeah, I agree, but, yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
No, not a 10 out of 10 like some people.
yeah. That, now you know why I was going, what? It's a fun movie. It's I don't know. What else you got, sir?
I saw the original, the Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, cool.
Man, Ernest Borgnine is awesome.
You don't hear that every day.
He is, though. Even in Airwolf.
Especially in Airwolf.
See, that's... You know what would have made the remake good? If Leslie Nielsen had played the captain.
Well, that remake needed a lot of help, but anyway. Yeah, wasn't that good?
Yeah, it was. It was really... I liked it, yeah. Also, I watched Jean Renoir's The Rules of the Game, which was awesome. It was like, it reminded me a lot of Shakespeare in a lot of ways. And
sure.
Very much story structure and things it was saying and stuff. It was awesomely made. Last thing I watched just today, actually, was Paradise Lost, the child murders at Robin Hood Hills, which is an insane story, like insane. Like it was very even-handed at early on. I was really engaged by it. And there's this point where I won't say what is revealed, but I was like, "Holy crap! Did that just happen?" Because it really put everything in the movie in an entirely new light, and it was really frightening. I found, and I really, have you seen the sequel?
I've heard the sequel isn't as good. I have not seen it.
I've heard some people say it's actually better, but
really, okay,
yeah. I'm interested in seeing that. That's it. Somebody can finally move on.
Cool. All right. Barry, why don't you go next?
Watched the season premiere of South Park, which is good stuff. I live just to hear the ghost of Michael Jackson go, "You're ignorant. You're all ignorant." I watched...
I have to go watch it.
That's okay. Good stuff. Season one of Tales from the Crypt, which sounds impressive until I tell you there's only six episodes, but it's good. You can really feel the show kind of getting its footing. There's that classic episode that Zemeckis did called "And All Through the House," woman's being stalked by Santa Claus. That's a really good episode. The rest of it's kind of hit and miss.
I actually used to, when the, I remember, I think it was like 4 years ago or so, I used to stay up until 4 a.m. to watch it on the Space Channel. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great show. It really does pick up after season one, but yeah, good stuff. Zombieland, loved Zombieland. Smart, funny. The trailers emphasize the action and the gore, and there's a lot of that, but it's really one of the most engaging and enjoyable movies I've seen all year. It has the best celebrity cameo of the year, which I will never, ever give away, but it's brilliant. Woody Harrelson is wonderful in the film. He actually makes it a real character instead of a caricature.
You don't want to give away that Tim Allen is in it?
No.
Okay.
Jesse Eisenberg, I gotta say, he does not work in Adventureland. I thought he was just okay in some movies, but he is perfect in Zombieland. It's weird because he was in Wes Craven's Cursed, and he's the best thing about that movie, and he's one of the best things about Zombieland. Everything in Zombieland just works. I just couldn't believe how much I love Zombieland.
Let me ask you a quick... Oh, go ahead.
Are you implying that he should play Freddy Krueger?
I'm implying that he works in genre movies. He really does. I like The Squid and the Whale, but there's something about, I don't know, he just brings a credibility to these crazy worlds. Like in Zombieland, I mean, the joke of the, without giving anything away, the joke of the movie, one of the jokes, is that he is completely competent fighting zombies, but he's terrified of clowns. You know, and there's something very recognizably human about that. And in Cursed, I mean, he just wants to end up with this girl that he loves so much, but he's turning into a werewolf, so it's like this ultra puberty thing that's going on with him. I really like him in genre movies. I don't know why that is, but
one of the reviews I've read for Zombieland was said that the reason why Woody Harrelson and Jesse Eisenberg work so well is because it's essentially putting Woody Allen and John Wayne into a zombie movie.
I could see that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Okay.
Dave and I went and saw Riff Tracks, Plan 9 from Outer Space. That was a lot of
somehow
fun.
At different theaters, but
yeah, that was ridiculous. We ended up going to different theaters, same movie, but that was fun with the John Colton special at the beginning.
Yeah, John Colton, and then you had the flying stewardess.
Yeah,
that is.
Yeah, Plan 9. Genius. Only see it with the Riff Track commentary, listeners, if you've never seen it. Otherwise, you'll hate yourself.
The thing about those is that when those guys do movies, Mystery Science Theater 3000, Riff Tracks, whatever, usually it's a movie that's so bad that you can't watch it without it. Mano's Hands of Fate, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. I mean, yeah, this is up there.
Definitely, definitely. A terrible movie, but fun when they have their way with it.
Who knew that the aliens were that gay?
Now, there's a soundbite for you.
Yeah.
Going to Pieces, a documentary about the history of slasher films. Very good. They skim over Phantasm and they skim over Black Christmas, which I didn't appreciate. But otherwise, it's extremely thorough interviews with Wes Craven, John Carpenter, everybody. Really, really good. It stops at about the time when they get to Japanese horror films and Saw. They stop at that point. But otherwise, really, really great documentary. I recommend that for horror fans. Wes Craven's New Nightmare, one of my favorite horror films, gets better every time I see it.
You're just getting ready for the Wes Craven series, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I love A New Nightmare. Brilliant, exciting, just ahead of its time, still holds up. I think it's probably the best in the series next to the first one. I love Wes Craven's New Nightmare. The last horror movie I watched this week was Martin, the George Romero film, about a young man who thinks he's a vampire, or is he really a vampire? We don't know until the end of the movie. But he basically injects you with a serum that makes you fall asleep, and while you're asleep, he slashes you, drinks your blood, and then runs off, leaves pills to make it look like you just committed suicide. So he's this sociopath who's convinced he's a vampire, but again, like, is he really a vampire or is he not? Because during the course of the movie, he has these flashbacks as to things that happened to him like hundreds of years ago. So it's like, is he really? We don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. Okay. Yeah, really kind of a weird Romero movie. And finally, the last thing I saw, because Julia last night, you know, we were snowed in like so many of people in the Springs. Julia's like, okay, you need to take a break from all these horror movies. You're starting to become completely sick and twisted. So we watched Braveheart. And Braveheart's great. It really holds up. It's the first time I've seen it since college, since 96. And thrilling, rich, beautiful. It's just the perfect movie. It really is.
I like Braveheart despite the fact that I think that Mel Gibson's a terrible director.
You think he's a terrible director? Why is that?
Yeah, he has no concept of subtlety at all.
Well, neither did Hitchcock.
No, but still, it's like there's a point where it becomes like self-parody. I found in both Passion of the Christ and Apocalypto. It's just maybe it's just that South Park episode ruined it for me, but I can just so see me like, oh, torture me, oh. Like every time I watch those, so yeah.
Well, we're talking about three movies that have no subtlety whatsoever. I mean,
even The Patriot.
Yeah, well, he didn't direct that one, but
close enough.
Very true. I mean, although I got to say, I mean, I remember Josh used to say, like, yeah, South Park ruined it for me. So I guess
South Park ruins a lot of things.
I shouldn't be surprised.
Phil Collins, yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
but Philip there's Glass. Like, I'll think of an example in Apocalypto when Jaguar Carr, the main character, they're trying to amp up the suspense of him, of, you know, he's about to be done in the ritual sacrifice, and they show one of the people having their head cut off and the head rolling down the temple stairs. I'm like, okay. Then they show it again, and I'm like, the one time established the suspense. Doing it twice is just like such gratuitous violence that I'm like, I can just so see him behind the camera being like, oh yes, more decapitations, oh yes.
I completely disagree.
There's that scene in Apocalypto 2 when the woman, she gives birth while being like drowned in or whatever. That's like right. the most ridiculous scene ever.
It was suspenseful.
I think that was a really interesting scene. Actually. Yeah. I actually hate that movie. I hated every second of watching that. I was just like, oh, just couldn't get into it. But that scene was actually really well done.
Mm-hmm. And Passion of the Christ.
So you didn't like the music?
Jesus. That's the entire movie.
Wow. And the Passion is going to come up later in this episode, believe it or not. Wow. Way to bring that around, dude. Okay, let's move on.
I still love Mel Gibson. I'm done.
I do like Braveheart. Just saying that.
All that to say,
Ethan likes Braveheart. Okay.
All right, I will finish it up. I watched the first disc of the first season of How I Met Your Mother, like the first 8 episodes. It's a fun show. It's a kind of a charming show. I'm not in a huge rush to finish it. Good enough. Yay, so Free Reynolds.
What's your basic synopsis of it?
It's an excuse to make a sitcom about how this guy eventually meets the mother of his children. He's explaining it to his kids, but like they're 4 years into this series now, 4 or 5 years. Yeah. So yeah,
he hasn't met his mother yet.
The future mother of his children.
It's like in the '80s. It's like a flashback.
No, it takes place in it starts in like 2035 or something like that.
So it is in the future. Okay.
Well, it's him telling the story. Apparently, they drop the kids eventually or whatever, but. I will say the cast is very solid.
Doesn't Bob Saget narrate it? Like, why does that make sense? Wouldn't he still have the same voice?
Essentially, it's very at least the first season or two or whatever is very loosely based on Bob Saget's life. In some way. I have no idea how.
Interesting.
I don't know what that does with my enthusiasm to check out the show.
You know, don't let it weigh one way or another. Jason Segel, Allison Hannigan, and NPH are all awesome in this show. Yeah, that's really all you need to know. I also watched, I went a little bit of a horror kick. I finally broke down and watched Saw 5.
Yes.
And, when I was talking to Jamin and Kyle Wines this week, I'm like, I'm shocked to death to say that there is artistic merit to the Saw movies. I'm not going to say that you need to watch the Saw movies.
But you do.
But if you are adventurous and want to take it, there is a very intriguing story there. I was very worried that when certain characters take over certain roles, goodness, that's the only way to put that. I was worried it was going to go downhill in a hurry, and I thought it was going to, and then it kind of changed on me.
Doesn't it make you want to watch the next one?
I don't know about that, but I'll catch it on DVD
or
something.
I'm going to be the new Josh with that.
Are you going to the midnight screening?
Oh, I'd love to. I don't know if there's anyone.
All six?
That's going to go with
you. No, not all six.
No.
Well, I'm sure Roxy would go with you.
We were going to do that this year, but. She said last year, and she said that you come home and you just hear screaming for like the next day. So I think I don't want to do that. But
isn't
I'm gonna
there
have
a Saw video game out.
I just saw that. Yes, there is on the 360.
That's sick.
Yeah, I've kind of been debating renting it since free rentals and all. But then I'm like, how are they going to remotely do that justice? So
I don't know. I thought it looked really interesting, but
I don't know. But I was very. It took an intriguing twist. The entire series. It hurts my brain to say it, but you have to give it credit.
I think
Darren Lynn Bozeman is a good chunk of the reason why it actually, because you look at the second four movies after the first one, they're totally different from that first movie, and he took the character in a good place. I think. So yes, and then because I had to, I watched Midnight Meat Train.
Because you had to?
Yes, I have to see it at some point.
Okay. Your own personal reasons why.
Yes, yes.
Are you going to mention your root canal?
I was going to say, I got a root canal on Wednesday, and so I came home and watched that afterward. And they have nothing to do with each other.
Sense.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. I wasn't a fan of it, I'll be very honest, but it has easily the best head decapitation ever put on film. Yeah. The most creative one I've ever seen in my life. It's a very intriguing story. Had it been successful, we would be talking about the slasher version of Doctor Who. You can have the same kind of character played by different actors, and it would make perfect sense in the continuity. So it was potentially brilliant, just not perfect, but it was interesting.
Don't you think the ending fell apart, like when the zombies and the things show up? I thought that's where it kind of derailed, but I thought everything building up to it was really intriguing.
I felt like the... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Ethan.
No, you should. I've been cutting you off so many times that it's only fair if you cut me off.
Go ahead, Melissa.
I felt like the photojournalism aspect of it was so interesting, and that's how he followed him around, and that's what I think. If that hadn't been in the movie, I would have totally not liked it.
Oh yeah, if it was just lost. Just an all-out slash movie. Yeah, the story was a hook for me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the final shot of the movie, you're like, okay, I know what this shot is. Why are you really building up to be like this is going to be some surprise shot?
Yeah.
Okay, and there it is. Okay, what were you going to say, Ethan?
Why was Brooke Shields in it? It was like so weird seeing her in it.
Yeah, that was random.
But she was good in it.
She was very good. That was a weird part, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. And then finally last night, I for some reason, I've been having this urge for the past few weeks, I revisited Idiocracy. And it's a great movie and it's a horrible movie at the same time. Because Mike Judge does such a good job showing where he thinks humanity is going, you can't help but hate it.
Hmm.
Just how stupid everyone is and just how idiotic everything is. And then you realize we're headed down that same road.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Well, you, would,
go ahead.
Wouldn't you equate Transformers 2 to Ask the Movie?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Are you kidding me? I couldn't stop laughing. Like that and how he sits there and, you know, he busts into Dax Shepard's, you know, apartment. And he's watching Ow My Balls. And you just watch it and you're like, this is just what this is coming. It's going to happen. Sure. And then you, I don't know why. I always laugh at the subtle metamorphosis of Fuddruckers. Just leaving it there.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I was just at Fuddruckers a month ago and I couldn't help but laugh as I walked out and looked at the sign. And so the opening with how people are braiding out of control. I mean,
with Cleavon.
Is that perfect? Perfect.
Yes. Very funny stuff. Good God, we're over a half. We're like 40 minutes into this episode.
Jumbo episode, yay!
All right, what hit theaters this weekend?
One whole release. Number one movie in America with $35 million opening. Couples Retreat, starring Jason Bateman, Vince Vaughn, Melanie Ackerman from Watchmen, and Jean Reno. In limited release, you got Good Hair, the Chris Rock documentary on hair, supposed to be good. An Education with Carey Mulligan, Alfred Molina, and Olivia Williams. And finally, Freestyle, starring Corbin Bleu of High School Musical fame, directed by William Dear, one of my favorites, director of Harry and the Hendersons, and If Looks Could Kill, starring Richard Grieco. Freestyle, which opened to like number 100 on the top 100 list. Yeah.
Okay. Did anyone see any of these at all?
I didn't. I want to see Couples Retreat, but yeah.
I liked how you thanked everyone for not going to see Couples Retreat on Friday night. That got a good laugh.
Oh, absolutely.
That got a good laugh.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to DVD.
DVDs. What do we got? Let's see. This week in DVD, The Proposal, Sandra Bullock, Ryan Reynolds, blockbuster movie.
Meh.
If only Betty White was not in this movie, I think I would have liked it just a little bit more. Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, about to become one of the big cult Halloween DVD rentals of this month, if not of all time. Will Ferrell in Land of the Lost, a movie I liked and no one else liked.
Yes, I like that too.
Thank you. Yeah, fun movie. Stupid, but fun. Every Little Step, documentary about the Broadway musical sensation A Chorus Line. Supposed to be very, very good. One of my favorite horror movies, I'd say, of all time, from the 80s. Joseph Rubin's The Stepfather, starring Terry O'Quinn, also Locke on Lost. I love this movie. I love his performance. Great film. Happy Birthday to Me, one of those twisty slasher movies from the 80s. Fun, has a twist that most people remember the twist, kind of like April Fool's Day. But it's fun. It's fun. It's good for what it is. Curious George, A Very Monkey Christmas. Sometimes I wonder why I even write these down. Futurama, the complete collection. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Except it's not the complete collection. It's the complete collection thus far.
Ah, that's lame.
Because they got the new... Well, no, it's because it's been renewed for Comedy Central.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes. You're right. Okay, so But does it also include the movies, too?
It includes the movies, and it looks like it's a Bender head in a jar, except it's just a box.
How much does it go for, do you know?
I don't even remember.
Like 100-something or more?
I hope not, because it's kind of... You can pick up each season at Walmart for like $15-$20. And yeah.
Okay. Something you should never buy unless you're completely intoxicated and you can't remember what happened to you the night before. Jackass, The Lost Tapes. So yeah, if you're Steve-O completist.
Is this kind of like keep releasing Tupac albums 15 years after he's dead?
But is he dead though?
Oh, yeah, I guess that's a good question.
Is he dead? I wonder myself. Lovecraft, Fear of the Unknown, documentary on H.P. Lovecraft, featuring John Carpenter, Neil Gaiman, Guillermo del Toro, and Stuart Gordon. That is a must. And we had three crap titles of the week. Let's see. I'm going to spin the wheel. I'll only read one. I will read National Lampoon's Endless Bummer, starring Matthew Lillard, Joan Jett, and Vanessa Angel. Lampoon's...
Joan Jett?
Joan Jett, as in I Love Rock and Roll. I bet they find a way to have her actually sing it in the movie, too.
Yeah. I was at Hollywood Video and like had my pick of what releases we could get. We didn't get The Stepfather in, so I'm looking. I'm like, what am I going to watch early? What am I going to watch early? Oh, look, nothing. Because, I, you know, I if Dragon Me to Hell had like some cool special features, I absolutely would have checked them out and given the movie another chance. There was like nothing on them. So what's the point?
Yeah, because Raimi does a good commentary. He does. I'd love to hear what he had to say about that.
I'd actually be interested in that, too.
It's funny. And even though he wasn't in the movie, I'd still figure that Bruce Campbell would be part of the commentary.
What? Yeah, exactly.
I just want to hear if he would have played the Acolyte. That's my only question.
Yeah.
All right, shall we move into news? And because holy crap, yeah, we need to cruise through this stuff. All right, news. I think Ethan's got the lion's share of it.
Hit it, Ethan.
Okay, well, Adrian Brody is going to be fighting some predators. How's that sound?
That sounds like a metaphor for his career. I mean, this is like desperation time.
You mean Roman Polanski?
You're talking about? Oh! Well played, sir. Well played.
Ooh, I didn't like that joke. Doesn't this strike you as like the guy is just kind of struggling to like have some kind of crossover hit after all the flops he's been in?
Hasn't he been doing a lot of genre stuff lately? Like I think he was in a Dario Argento movie and...
I think you're right, and plus The Village, King Kong, and
And actually though, the funny thing is when I first read this headline, I thought it said Adam Brody, so I thought like Seth Cohen from The OC would be fighting predators. I was like, yes!
Which would make sense. Adam Brody's in Jennifer's Body. He was the satanic rocker in that
who
movie.
Sings Through the Trees, which I cannot stop listening to that stupid song. But it,
where do you hear it? Is it on the radio?
No, it's I just downloaded the soundtrack to Jennifer's Body.
Oh.
And, you know, it's like a fictional band, but I don't know who actually really sings the song. But, yes, unfortunately.
I just hope there's a scene where he makes out with a predator and his nose bends into the side of the predator. Like, you know, any other movie when he makes out with someone.
I totally know what you're talking about.
Wouldn't it be cool if he made out in a scene with Barbra Streisand? What would their noses do then?
I think we'd get like ripping the space-time continuum.
Wouldn't be Alien versus Predator. It'd just be nose versus nose.
Who else is in it? Isn't there another name actor in Predators?
Yeah, Topher Grace is in it.
Oh my gosh.
And Robert Rodriguez is doing it. I don't know.
I love Rodriguez. I really do.
Here's the thing, though. Do you think Rodriguez can pull this off?
He's not directing it, though.
Oh, he's not. Okay.
Oh, he's producing it? I'll forget it. It's going to suck. Topher Grace, come on. I mean,
Eddie Brock. I'm kidding.
Let me put it this way. I mean, Spider-Man 3, say what you will, it was the top grossing film of the year. You figured he would be able to pick something really good after that. Really, I mean, in Good Company, he was excellent in that movie.
Yes, he was. Absolutely.
That 70s show.
That 70s show, Win a Day with Tad Hamilton. He was good. He's good in those movies. He was even arguably very good. I thought he was good in Spider-Man 3 for the most part.
For what he was given, I think he did fine.
Exactly. Well, yeah, actually, why is he doing Predators?
Apparently Danny Trejo is in it, so...
Oh. He's in like every other movie anyway.
Dude, Machete versus Predators. Come on!
That would be kind of cool.
Should we talk about the Toy Story 3 trailer?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
You said you had something very specific to say. This is not the teaser where it's just like, hey, we're making a movie. This is like...
It's weird that they're showing that much footage this early, since that's next summer. But... for me, it just feels like they had everything they needed to say about that movie with the first one. For me, the second one was kind of more of the same. This feels like more of the same. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, but this looks same feeling when I watched the Shrek 3 trailer. Like, they don't need to do this.
It's Toys on the Run. Again.
Yeah.
Well, and considering that these came out so long ago.
It's been 10 years now.
It's like all the people who were kids when they saw this, are we really going to want to see more of this? And...
this is the first time I've seen a Pixar trailer, and I think cash grab for the first time. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Cars?
Well.
Cars is...
I said cash grab, not mistake.
Oh, dang.
Actually, I was going to say, basically what happened with this movie is that Disney was going to do this without Pixar.
Right.
Because they were splitting away, right? Mm-hmm. And then they re-signed their contract. Then Pixar's like, "Oh no! We'll do this, okay? Just don't mess with it. We'll do it, okay?
We've got the perfect story."
The same one.
Well, I heard it was going to be straight to video. Well, straight to DVD.
John Lasseter's like, "No, okay, we'll do it, okay? Just don't touch it, okay? We'll do it, okay?" It's just they're making it just so it won't be done crappily, you know? Like, it's just more like. It's not really their first choice, but they're like, well, either they do it, make it horrible, redo it, and just make it all right, you know? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the impression I've gotten. But
I'm hoping for the best, you know, and I'd rather see this than Cars 2, but why not another Incredibles? Why not another Monsters, Inc.?
Because Randy Newman needs the work.
Speaking of this, I'm reading this quote right now on Randy Newman's IMDb page. My music has a high irritation factor. I've always tried to say something. Eccentric lyrics about eccentric people. Often it was a joke, but I would plead guilty on the grounds that I prefer eccentricity to the bland.
I wouldn't call his music bland. He's right. His worst songs are truly annoying. They're not bland. They're like a bad jingle you can't get out of your head.
Very, very bad jingle. But you said you've given me...
He wrote the music to Three Amigos. My little buttercup has the sweetest smile.
We did that beforehand and thought we'd do it again.
Screw that. You've got a friend in me.
And we have other songs that, well, if he'd written them for other movies, we've got one at the end of the movie, at the episode.
He's done some good stuff. He has. I mean, I really hate most of the songs he wrote for Pixar movies, but the music he wrote for Parenthood and The Paper, yeah.
Okay.
He's not all bad.
But Barry, I think it's interesting that you bring up that they have so much footage in this one trailer, and I think it's because they just had Toy Story 1 and 2 in 3D, and so it's like, oh, you love these, don't you? Well, now there's another one. Like, they're trying to just... Like, everyone's just going to buy it, I guess. So.
It's been working, though, because Toy Story 2 and 3, I don't know if you read this, over the weekend...
One and two.
It's made $22 million. These movies are on DVD. They've been available for years, but people are flocking to see these in 3D. And so the publicity machine is really working for Toy Story 3.
I just couldn't work up the gumption to go see it for the preview screening. I was just like, No, I'm good.
I know, the fact that you get to see both of them for the price of one, it's like, I hate Toy Story 2. There's nothing that's too special about that for me. So I was like, I just want to see the one anyway. I would just
want to see one, and for the chase scene at the end, which is so awesome. I would love to see that in 3D. I really would.
Okay, well, let's just do a couple more, Ethan, and then we'll take a break.
Okay, Marlon Wayans will be replacing Eddie Murphy in the Richard Pryor biopic.
Is that official?
Yep.
Yeah.
That is so weird. Yeah,
who's directing it? I forget the guy's name.
Bill Condon, who did Kinsey and Gods and Monsters and Dreamgirls.
Bill Condon came out and he was like, Marlon Wayans, he's ready, he's excited, he's ready to surprise people. I'm like,
let's not forget, though, the one good movie he did, though. Remember how good he was in that?
Yeah.
Requiem? Yeah, Requiem.
He's
excellent in that.
Dave, you've got a pretty big hard-on for Aronofsky, so I'm surprised you kind of keep beating up on Marlon Wayans.
Oh, no, he is amazing in Requiem for a Dream. I think it's more the performance that Aronofsky got out of him.
Sure.
Because then, I work part-time at Hollywood Video. People bring back Dance Flick, and every time they're like, that movie was god-awful. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but do you really expect him in this to dress up as a white chick and stuff?
I'm hoping this will be for him what Dreamgirls was for Eddie Murphy. It'll be a chance to show that he really has diversity. And I'm sure he'll go back to his bread and butter and do White Chicks too.
Well, but I'm sure it'll be for him what Ray was for Jamie Foxx.
That'd be great if it's that good, because I'm a big, big fan of Pryor. And if they do his story right, this could be a really phenomenal, really powerful film. Wayans would not be my first choice, but if he really tested that well and he's actually going to become the character like they say he is, more power to him.
Yeah, okay. I don't hold much hope.
Do you have a better pick, though? Do you think there's somebody else who could do Pryor better? Like Jamie Foxx? Is there somebody else you could think of who...
Dave Chappelle?
Yeah, yeah. I think he's so good at doing imitation, I think he could do a good job.
Or Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Ooh.
That guy's brilliant. Why did it fall apart with Murphy? Because
Murphy's too old.
It's too bad, because he does a good Pryor, and he worked with Pryor. He and Pryor were friends. Like, he would have been a good choice.
Doesn't that creep you out, though, that like when the movie gets to the point where they're making the movie Harlem Nights, who's going to play Eddie Murphy?
That'd be interesting. That's a good point. Oh, Charlie Murphy.
Darkness, everyone. Okay. Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
I think that was a good transition piece for this next story. Apparently, Jamie Foxx wants to do a Mike Tyson biopic.
Just because he did it on In Living Color doesn't mean it's going to work as a movie.
Well, it's like this screams to me, I want another Oscar.
Yes.
Like, but, he already got his Oscar for playing Ray Parker Jr. Now he wants to,
Well, I think after Stealth and some of the stinkers he's been in, I think he needs to show that he's actually still an actor. Because I think a lot of people have forgotten. Because really, it's hard to...
His music career. Don't forget his music career.
His music career. Yeah.
Okay, should we go ahead and take a break now?
Jamie Foxx. Yes, yes.
On that happy note,
yes.
Let's take a break, and we will be back shortly.
Okay.
Hey, Tom, great game.
Yeah, Phil, that was a close one.
Are you okay, man? You seem a little distant today.
I'm fine.
Really?
It's nothing, just some guys at work.
What's up?
I just feel out of my depth sometimes. They have all these deep discussions about the meaning of life, destiny, philosophy, and all I can offer is the last movie I saw.
Hey, man, you know what? I used to be just like you.
You? No way.
Yes way, Phil. For years, I felt inadequate, shallow, and unable to join in the big conversations.
What happened?
I found movie mantras.
Movie mantras? Is that some kind of cream?
No, my friend. It's a weekly podcast by some British guy that takes quotes from films and weaves them into usable wisdom. It totally changed my life.
Sounds perfect, but I bet it's expensive.
Well, the show offers a guarantee to turn you into a deep thinker capable of achieving all of your life goals or your money back.
Fantastic.
But the best part is that it's completely free.
Oh, my God.
That's right. So go to www.moviemantras.com, and in a few weeks, you'll feel just like Yoda, only better looking.
I'll go right now. They have Wi-Fi in this gym. What was it again? www.moviemantras.com?
That's right. Movie Mantras. Shaves as close as a blade or your money back.
Hi there. This is Paul.
This is Storm.
And this is Randy Newman.
And you are listening to
Screen Geeks
Radio.
Yeah, it's the best in America.
And we're back. We're going to be discussing David Fincher's 2002 thriller, Panic Room.
This is a good Kristen Stewart movie.
This is the film that he did, the first film after Fight Club. So the anticipation was huge. Kind of like any movie he does, the anticipation is always huge and the expectations are always wrong because they're always expecting to be like his previous film. And it never seems to work out that way. Panic Room was a blockbuster. It has interesting origins. It was supposed to star Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman, of course, hurt herself in the making of Moulin Rouge. So, of course, Jodie Foster jumped in at the last minute as a replacement. Jodie Foster does a great job in the film. Jodie Foster was supposed to play the Sean Penn role in The Game. So this is her chance to finally get the chance to work with David Fincher. Nicole Kidman is in the movie, though. When the girlfriend calls.
That's right.
Yeah, she's the voice on the phone, the girlfriend who is briefly. But anyway, that's Nicole Kidman's one little cameo in the movie. So
here's what I love about David Fincher movies: none of them are the same.
Yeah,
he's always going various different places, mm-hmm. and he does it so well. Oh my goodness!
It's a real edge of your seat movie. I mean, it's like it's Wait Until Dark and taking a really real high tech version of that. I love this movie. I really did.
I'll just start with one thing that I love about him. I think I will go on record and say that David Fincher is the king of CG use, as far as I'm concerned, because he makes it organic. He makes it almost invisible to the naked eye. In Panic Room, it's easier to see.
Sorry. No? I completely disagree.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Completely.
Really?
Who do you think is more adequate?
No, I just think I think it's terribly used in this movie. There's scenes where like the camera zooming across, it's like a CGI table. I'm like, really?
And that's what I was getting ready to say, is that the CG is not the strongest that he's used. It's not, and part of it is, you know, like in Seven it was better used, in Zodiac it was better used. In Seven it was probably used better because it was used sparingly because the technology wasn't there at the time. In this case, the way that I liked the CG was used was that it helped to establish, you know, a depth and actual what was going on in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a scene where Jared Leto, I'll just say he's on fire, spoiler alert. And it was like, I was just like astounded by how bad it looked. And there's a scene like where a gas tank is spinning around and it was CGI. I'm like, why can't this be practical? It boggled my mind, especially since I love Fincher, but just, yeah, a lot of the just CGI in this movie took me out of it completely. And there's another scene where Kristen Stewart is using the flashlight for Morse code,
mm-hmm.
and it's the camera zooming out, and the flashlight is CGI. I'm like, why? Why does that have to be CGI?
Well, when you're looking in through the pipe, you kind of there was really no way to really
film that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying because it was a limitation at the time. I think he tried to push it a little bit too far with this movie, But it didn't pull me out of it necessarily.
Yeah, yeah, likewise. Yeah, I mean, no, I agree with you. There are moments where I certainly noticed the CGI.
Absolutely.
But it did, yeah, but no, there are special effects that pull you out of the movie because they're so obvious, or they're so cornball, or work in spite of how bad the movie is, like The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. The effects in this movie, you get the sense that the technology just wasn't always there at the time to accommodate him. But I did like the way it was used. This was one of the earliest movies that was ever done in a pre-visualization. They call it pre-vis now. They don't even say pre-visualization. But Fincher very famously, using a computer, basically did a storyboard that moved almost like the Watchmen comic. And he was one of the first filmmakers to do this, where he had the entire movie storyboarded, so we knew exactly what angles, what shots, and he just kind of let the actors be organic. But his vision for the movie was very solid from the beginning, which each scene, what each shot would be like. And maybe some of that carries over, you know, since some of the CGI work, again, like, might look a little unpolished or, you know, a little primitive for its time. But I love the design of this movie, and I love the way he designed it. For me, the movie is like a steel trap. It's just, it just works so well.
But Ethan definitely does have a point about the CG being lacking. I mean, you do make a very valid point. I still think that he uses CG very well, but it wasn't used perfectly in this movie.
Well, I felt that way about Benjamin Button, too. And it's not that the effects were bad. There were just some parts where I thought, well, it's obvious it's not, you know, Brad Pitt's face.
They should have gotten an actual guy who ages backwards for that.
Exactly. Well, you know, maybe makeup could have done a better job of that. I really do. I mean, I think maybe, like, you know, someone like, of course, the late Stan Winston or Rick Baker, I think they could have conveyed it better than the whole CGI cut and paste of having his head on the little body. But
yeah. What did you think of this movie, Melissa?
I would say this is my least favorite Fincher film that we've seen. And
yeah,
by far. And I felt like it was so painfully foreshadowed and obvious at the beginning that the very first thing they show you is this panic room, and Jodie Foster's already freaking out about it. And just I felt like they just jumped into that a little too fast. And then the whole rest of the tone of the movie, I was also kind of in a bad mood when I watched this, because I watched it this morning and I was just like, meh. Whatever.
After Dead Girl, that'll do it to you.
Yeah. But it just, like, they should have given more background maybe to what was going on with their life, why they moved here, why they were moving at all, what, like, I don't know, whatever. They just kind of jumped right into it, and it was just like, okay, we know that something's going to have to do with this, so it just ruined it for me, I think.
I think a lot of this movie honestly feels like stuff you'd see in a How to Write a Screenplay book, especially with Forrest Whitaker's character in his background. It's just kind of like, really? It's just, but yeah, I think I'm kind of, it sounds like I'm beating up on the movie here, but I think it's very watchable. Like, I don't hate it. I think it's entertaining, and I there's a sequence that's soundless that I think is just, like, superb.
And I would agree with both Ethan and Melissa that it is probably is my least favorite of the Fincher movies. And like Ethan said, it's not to say it's a bad movie, because, you know, a quote-unquote lesser Fincher film is still a pretty darn good movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, lesser Fincher movie is still Alien 3. So.
Well, okay, yeah. Yeah, but he got hosed on that one.
But there's still greatness in that film, though. There is. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Forrest Whitaker angle. Whitaker, that was one thing they actually went back and reshot. I know a number of times when they had test screenings, the whole notion of how good his character is. Because a lot of the test audience originally really liked the Whitaker character. So they went back and made him a little more sympathetic. They kind of went back and forth. But he does indeed get busted at the end like everybody else does. I know
spoiler.
That was, spoiler. But because I know apparently Fincher said that was a real sticking point as to, like, what exactly what happened to him. Does he need to suffer the same fate as the Leto character? And, you know, and of course Dwight Yoakam. I love Dwight Yoakam in this movie.
Yeah,
I think he's terrifying.
And, yeah.
And speaking of Jared Leto, is terrible in this movie. Terrible.
Really?
Like, I think he's so, it's this LA pretty boy trying to be bad, and he's like doing all this over the top, like, gestures with his hand and face, and it's just, I just see, yeah, as this pretty boy, like, putting on cornrows and saying, I'm a badass.
See, when he did all that, it made his character's resolution all that more satisfying for me.
Yeah, but still, it doesn't change the fact that he sucks in the movie.
Okay. Well, then.
I like Jodie Foster's performance in this film a lot.
Yeah, she's very good in it. And Kristen Stewart, I like too. I thought she was pretty. She kind of looked like Macaulay Culkin, but she.
No, I thought she believably looks like she could be Jodie Foster's daughter. I really believe that. And I really like the dynamic between the two of them, the whole notion of what her ailment is and how that fits in the story.
It kind of seemed weird at the beginning when she's like riding a scooter. Like it seemed like it's like people saying, oh, we have to show that she's still this kid. So she's riding a scooter, but yet for some reason she's like an 11-year-old girl and she's wearing a Sid Vicious t-shirt.
That was also early 2000s, too, so that was kind of a time when kids were doing that kind of thing. And
she was pretty young, too, come to think of it, because she's like, 17 now? So 2001 when they made the movie, so she was like, 11? Yeah.
Yep.
She's a little thing.
It's sad when you can say that Panic Room is, you know, the vintage Kristen Stewart.
Well, I never saw Into the Wild. Is she good in that? I haven't seen that. I've heard that she's very good in that one, too.
And very attractive as well.
She just plays the same kind of character, though. I feel like in Into the Wild, she's the same kind of thing. Better than Adventureland kind of weird, grungy girl that she was. But I don't know. Her character says less with words, but says more by not saying anything at all. So she's okay.
Followed by the tongue sticking out. Yes. Yeah, I think she was good. It is kind of odd that she's not, you know... I think the reason why I liked Adventureland so much was because I saw Twilight first. And it was just such an improvement in acting. That's funny. But you see Panic Room, and she is very solid in it,
I thought. Yeah. No, it's a real actor's piece. I really felt... there's some Fincher movies where some of the other actors kind of vanish into the background. Like, it's hard to remember anybody other than Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt, and Kevin Spacey in Seven. But in this film, it really felt like a real ensemble piece. I really liked the way that the actors were directed in this film, and I love the climax. The scene, the bit with Dwight Yoakam and the sledgehammer has still stayed with me after all these years. And yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, it may be formula for him, but I think it's... I thought it was one of the best films of that year, honestly, 2002. I thought it was one of the best formula movies to deal with the whole killer in the house idea.
I think Fincher definitely took more of a Hitchcockian approach to it, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the opening credits is a pretty obvious nod to North by Northwest.
Mm-hmm. But I could see, like, even, you know, relating it to like a cross between almost like Rear Window and Rope, you know, that kind of thing where it's very cramped and very. I could see Hitchcock having made this movie.
Sure.
In many ways. Maybe he would have done better, but.
You know, wouldn't have cast Jared Leto, but...
Well, yeah. Yeah. Would have cast Zac Efron.
Yay!
Zac Efron would have been, like, what, 4 when this movie was made?
We're remaking this movie now.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, and again, to say that it's a lesser movie and to say Hitchcock would have done better. We're talking about Alfred freaking Hitchcock here.
Right.
So I know there are people who aren't big fans, but still.
Well, like lesser Hitchcock and lesser Fincher, like it's the same thing. We're talking about guys who are masters of their craft. They're fantastic visualists. And even at their absolute lesser, you still have got great things there. And there's great things in this movie.
Frenzy. I'm sorry.
Frenzy's a brilliant movie, Dave. I don't like the movie, but it's very well made, you gotta admit.
I couldn't get past it.
The scene where she is being raped and murdered and the camera actually pulls all the way out of the house, I mean, that's tour de force stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like the movie either, Dave. I agree with you. I think Frenzy's an ugly, ugly movie. I would never watch it again, but, you know, it's supposed to shock.
It's kind of like the same thing with 2001 for me. Kubrick, it's a great movie. You know, it's beautifully made. Can't stand that stupid movie.
You're not alone. There are many, many like you.
Yeah, so I still liked Panic Room, even though I can recognize it as maybe a lesser film.
But still, like, if this was the one movie Fincher did, we'd be like, man, he's a really good director. And if you were to do another movie, like, from the director of Panic Room, we'd be like, oh, Panic Room, well, that was a good one. I'd see that.
Well, I remember they did on the Zodiac for advertising. They didn't say from the director of Seven Fight Club. They said from the director of Seven and Panic Room.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, Panic Room is a hit, unlike Fight Club and... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Should we talk about the DVD release of this?
Yeah.
Now, did you get the one disc, Ethan?
I bought it used for $4, and it was the Super Bit.
Yeah, yeah. That was a cool thing. It was like, this is one of the few movies you could find, like, the cheap bin for $3 or $4. That's Super Bit, which means that's a high bit rate, so it's the best video quality you can get. It has the Dolby 5.1 as well as DTS. Apparently, there's a 3-disc edition, too. That drops the DTS, doesn't have quite as good a video quality, but it has like a few, like 3 commentaries on it and like a whole bunch of behind the scenes. It's kind of hard to find in stores, though. If I can find it, I will get it, though. Like, Fincher's the kind of director I could see owning everything he's done. it's just solid stuff.
Well, since we're at the very end of this, essentially, do we want to like discuss our favorite Dent Fincher films or?
It's so hard. What's yours, Ethan?
I'd say Fight Club. I'd actually say overall, Fincher is one of the guys who's actually really responsible for me loving movies, to be honest.
That's great.
Fair enough. I'm torn, honestly, between The Game and Zodiac. They're both just such, and they're that. Like I said, every movie's different, so you can make a case for pretty much any of them.
Mm-hmm. I'd actually say I think Zodiac is maybe his best movie, but I'd say Fight Club is my favorite.
That's cool.
That's how I feel about it too, Ethan. Because Fight Club's my favorite, but
was that the first Fincher movie you saw?
Probably.
Okay.
And I really like Zodiac though too, but it's just different than Fight Club is, and the reasons I like it are different. Like, yeah. Them both are different. So.
And The Game was my first David Fincher movie, which is why it has a special place in my heart. What was your first one?
Alien 3.
Okay, so you've seen the chronology.
Well, you know, I think like most people, I wasn't aware of it was a David Fincher movie. I just knew that it was the guy who directed the Paula Abdul videos was doing the new Alien film. Like, that's bizarre.
Wait, was it the one with the cat?
Yeah.
Opposites Attract with Arsenio Hall as the voice of the...
He did that. He did Forever Your Girl. And he did Straight Up. He did most of her first videos. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he did some Madonna, too.
Yeah, he did some really good Madonna videos. Yeah, yeah. You know, if you look at it, if you get your IMDb page still up, Ethan, if you look at the stuff that he directed video-wise, I mean, it's pretty impressive. You've heard of all of those songs. And the videos are really good, too. But he just seemed like a really bad choice to do the Alien movie. No, he was a great choice. It was the script that was the problem.
Yeah. What's your favorite of his films, though?
Oh, Zodiac. I just love that movie. It's like a comfortable slipper going back to it. I just love that film. I love it more every time I see it. Everything. I just think the characters, the characterizations, and it's his passion for the movie, that for the subject matter that comes through. You know, some movies, I mean, you could even say, arguably, that maybe Panic Room, it's a little too overly stylized at times, that he's enjoying playing with his toys too much. For me, Zodiac, everything. It just feels like he respects the material enough to make it stylish and cool, but not so much where it's distracting. It's very violent and pleasant, but only as violent and as unpleasant as it needs to be. It's not completely in your face.
It doesn't glorify it.
No, not at all. We're supposed to be horrified, and we are. I love every performance in the movie. Even Anthony Edwards is brilliant in that movie. Everything about Zodiac. I just love, love, love that movie.
Absolutely. Just for the heck of it, we are... This wraps up this series. We're starting Wes Craven next episode. And after that, we will be doing an episode about Firefly.
Great.
TV show. Great. From there, we have not decided what we're going to be talking about next.
Tom Green.
Oh gosh, you know, after we do a few more directors, it might be interesting to change to actors at some point too.
Sure,
that would be
Tom Green.
Yeah, there you go,
Tom Green. So we'll talk about Road Trip, Freddy Got Fingered, Charlie's Angels, and what else, Ethan? Didn't you do that one, Stealing Harvard, or Jason Lee? Yeah. I never saw that.
Four movies right there. Perfect.
Wow,
is Stealing Harvard any good? I never saw it.
I didn't see it
either. But over at our Facebook page, if you do search for Screen Geeks Radio, we're up to 41 fans. Woo! Thank you so much. If we had like a third of our fans like go join it, we could do Screen Geeks, like facebook.com/Screen Geeks easily.
Cool.
But I put up a thing in the discussion asking who you'd like us to talk about, because we love getting feedback from everyone, and sometimes people don't want to email, and I totally understand that. Just jot a name in the Facebook discussion page. Yeah,
I'm gonna start a discussion on the page as well called Favorite Ethan Moment. So
there you go.
That also.
So you're prepared for the Daniel Plainview, right?
I hope people can see me as more than just that.
I'm sure they will, but that is goodness by itself. Let's see. Do we want to say anything else about Mr. Fincher's work?
What is he doing next? He's doing the Facebook movie, right? Yeah, that should be interesting. Called The Social Network, right? Is that the running title? Yeah. And who's starring in it?
Jesse Eisenberg.
That's right. My favorite actor.
Okay.
And Justin Timberlake.
And do we know, is it about the origins of Facebook? Is it a thriller about it? Or
About the origins. I think that it was based on a book called The Accidental Billionaires.
Hmm.
When is it supposed to release?
It hasn't even started shooting yet.
Yeah, knowing him, it'd be like 2012 before we see it.
But it's, you know, again, you know, I'm not big on the idea, but at the same time, you know, as I've said several times already, no two Fincher movies are really the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I shouldn't be shocked that he went down this road, but it was a bit surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But he's a good director. His stuff is always worth watching, even if you're not a big fan of it.
And making a Facebook movie could be a really good and much needed commentary on Facebook. Mm-hmm. We're all kind of just doing Facebook, not even thinking about what a waste of time it is. And I'm a Facebook fan.
And Twitter, as much as I'm on Twitter too.
Yeah, I think it might be a really great thing if he goes that angle, or if he does something completely different. Who knows? Who knows with David Fincher?
Well, and it'll be a fascinating commentary to see what Facebook, and I'm sure there'll be a commentary about MySpace or whatever else too, and where it is now is where they had envisioned it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I do like Facebook. I do like Twitter. It's a fun way to network with other bloggers, other people in general, fans, whoever. It's a fun thing to do, but yeah.
Well, I've actually heard the movie described as kind of like the Treasure of the Sierra Madre, but with computers instead of Mexicans.
I can't even envision that. That doesn't help me at all. I have no idea what to expect now. That's interesting.
All right. So let's go ahead. And so we're doing Wes Craven next week.
Mm-hmm.
Back. And we're going to be starting off with The People Under the Stairs.
Good movie.
Yes. So if you want to follow along, go rent it. Netflix, Blockbuster, Hollywood, whatever. Might even be on demand. You never know.
I bought it for my class. I bought it for $5 at Best Buy. It's a double feature with People Under the Stairs and Shocker.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to see if I can borrow that from you.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. But you're not going to be here next week.
I'm sorry, no. I'll be in Indiana. But I will be back for the following week. I'll be back for the new Nightmare, I promise.
Cool. Cool. So that will be a good time. Let's go ahead and talk about what is hitting theaters this week.
This is a cool looking week, or at least it looks cool.
It's better than last week.
Well, you know, I got to say, I've been looking forward to this one. Finally, Spike Jonze is Where the Wild Things Are. Among the people in the cast, Mark Ruffalo and Catherine Keener, in the Young Max Records making his film debut. Yeah, finally get to see this movie. Finally. How exciting.
I finally get to see a serious man this week.
Oh, nice. Yay. Very cool, man. Oh, that's going to be good.
Yeah.
The remake of The Stepfather. I mentioned, I love the actor who's starring in it, Dylan Walsh, who knows, but I'm going to go out on the record and say, if you've seen the original, don't see the remake.
Do you really think, take off your nostalgia glasses here.
Okay.
Do you really think it'll be better than the, like, really?
Yeah.
Like, really?
I really do. I really do, because the trailer shows all the scenes that they did in the original, but the original did them better than they show them in the trailer.
I mean, Barry, but don't you think in like 20 years when we have the Screen Geeks, the Next Generation podcast, and they have, you know, the version of you that'll be played by Patrick Stewart, and he's like, oh, I love the Stepfather 2009 when I was growing up, but this remake, like, can't you just kind of see through that point of view?
You should see Barry's brain breaking right in front, right before our eyes. It's so, a thing of beauty.
So is it better that I'm being played by Patrick Stewart in 2030, or... I'm sorry. I
think Dave would be Worf, but...
Wow. You're going to be Wesley Crusher.
Oh, no. Ew.
Who would you like to be, Melissa?
I'm not sure.
Not Kristen Stewart?
No.
Counselor Troy. Okay.
Don't there you go. There.
Okay, let's move on. Okay,
so Stepfather. Awesome Stepfather. Gerard Butler. Remember when we used to look forward to his movies? Gerard Butler.
No, I don't.
It's been a long time, hasn't it? Law Abiding Citizen. It co-stars Jamie Foxx, who we've been talking about, and it's directed by F. Gary Gray. He did Friday, he did The Negotiator, and Set It Off. He's a good action movie director.
So is this Lakeview Terrace 2?
You know what this looks like? It looks just like Death Sentence. It's another... remember that one?
Okay. I love
it. Or The Brave One. Yeah, I mean, it's another revenge movie about it. Family got killed, and he goes after the law, takes it into his own hands. It's another one of those movies.
Okay.
And he plays an American.
All right.
Again. Let's see. Paranormal Activity also expands this weekend because it's currently one of the biggest hits in America. Made $7 million on a $10,000 budget. So chances are, if you haven't seen it yet, you might be able to this weekend.
Cool. And what is hitting DVD this next week? Next week, not this week, next week.
Currently, the number one movie of the year and top grossing film in the world, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Yeah.
Available in a 1- and 2-disc special edition, also Blu-ray.
On top of whatever special editions they're going to have at the different stores or the Best Buy Steelbooks or the...
If you've seen it once, why see it again?
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Dave.
What was that, Ethan?
I wish I could unsee it.
You watched it. I need to get that from Futurama. You watched it. You can't unwatch it.
That's the thing. Like, I'm glad I did see it because I wouldn't have believed it otherwise. If people had told me, like, oh, yeah, yeah, dogs are humping in the first 5 minutes of the movie, yeah. I wouldn't have believed it. Peanuts, the 1970 collection, volume 1.
And I have to pull up what all this is.
This is good stuff.
It is. Okay, it's the 1970s collection, volume 1. It's a mystery Charlie Brown. Play it again, a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. It's the Easter Beagle. There's no time for love, and you're not elected.
I like the Easter Beagle. I've seen that
for
one.
For like $22.
Good deal.
That's such a cool set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Vegas, season 1.
If you're a Death Proof fan, the name sounds familiar at least.
Vegas, season 1. Yes, that's James Caan and Nikki Cox, right?
I think so. Sure, why not?
I saw like one episode. Blackadder, remastered Ultimate Edition. That's going to be good. Yay, Atkinson. Good stuff. I'm kind of curious about this, although Dave...
I have the details.
Oh, you have the details? Great. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. One of my favorite movies. This is the Those Aren't Pillows edition. What's on this?
Okay, apparently it has... the bonus features listed are Getting There is Half the Fun, The Story of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, John Hughes for Adults, a tribute to John Candy, and an additional deleted scene called Airplane Food.
Cool.
So there's some stuff.
Yeah, at least there's something. I've been wanting a special edition of this movie forever. So great, great. Dr. Quinn, the complete series.
That was our potential crap title of the week, wasn't it?
Got to get your Jane Seymour fix there. Fawlty Towers, the complete collection. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Some John Cleese madness. Plastic Man, the complete series. What a great show.
I remember watching this cartoon in the 80s. It is goofy, but it's so much fun.
It's a lot of fun. For those of you who really need to be horrified out of your socks this Halloween, Ichi the Killer on Blu-ray. Ugh, no thank you. This next title is more up my alley. William Castle, the film collection. These are all William Castle's 50 Cent thrillers that played actually worldwide, nationwide, and most of these had his crazy gimmicks attached to the film. There's one of which...
You may just go through the whole
list. Yeah, please, go ahead.
We've got 13 Frightened Girls, which sounds like a Grindhouse title. Right? It really does.
It really does.
13 Ghosts, Homicidal, Straitjacket, The Old Dark House, Mr. Sardonicus, The Tingler, and Zots.
The 13 Frightened Girls, there was the gimmick there was he actually had a contest saying, if you win the contest, you get to star in my movie. So the leads in the movie never acted before and never again. They're terrible.
Well, okay. Hey,
Zots is... What's up?
If I have to see any of these, which one should I see? Because I think they're doing like a marathon of these on Turner Classic Movies this month.
I would recommend Zots. Zots is fun. It's about a guy who has this magic coin. If he says the word Zots, he controls all space and time.
Okay.
Yeah, Zots is fun. 13 Ghosts is okay. Yeah. And finally, our crap title of the week, Satan's School for Girls. Graduates include Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton, and Megan Fox.
Oh, well played, sir.
Oh, boy.
Dang. Okay, and I feel awful, but we're running such a long show, I'm going to put off the voicemail for a week.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to have to get an answer to you for a question that's put to you. Yeah, we'll talk about that after the show. Valencia, we have your voicemails. We'll play them next week.
Valencia.
I'm so sorry. We're on like an hour and a half long show or something like that. So I really want to keep it short. If you want to have your voicemail ignored by us too.
Please call.
By all means, you go right ahead and do that. You know, someday I'll actually have this phone number memorized or something. But you can give us a call at 719-553-5664. You can also email us at podcast, Melissa, Ethan, Barry, or Dave, all at screengeeks.com. And yeah, we'll be back next week to be talking about The People Under the Stairs. It shall be great fun and freaky goodness. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
Melissa.
Take it easy.
Town. them nasty Romans trying to keep you down. Got no shoes, but hey, good news. One day you're gonna be the king of the Jews. Crucifixion was a rough way to go, but Mel Gibson made a whole lot of dough. Nobody believed that he could win. Go, Jesus, go. Up you goes. You, my friend. Go, Passion of the Christ, go. You got a reason to live. I'm going to hell, ain't I?